The image on the screen is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he's holding some japa beads. And along, so the Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name, is the main deliverance that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. But in addition, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the teachings of devotion, of how to live a life of devotion to Krishna. The means is the chanting, and the way of life is the way of devotion. And the foundation of those teachings is Srimad Bhagavatam. We can say it both ways. Lord Chaitanya's teachings are the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. Or, the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam are the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. They're equal to one another. This is one of the main themes that Jiva Goswami was presenting. It's nice. Amongst all the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest. The Lord teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam are the same. Therefore, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are the highest. So, the first one is very important. How can we say the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam are the highest? But that's another discussion. That's Tattva-sandarbha, the first half of Tattva-sandarbha. The teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam are the highest. So, if you were to describe in a short little phrase what the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are, what would you say? There's a Sanskrit term, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Just like the teachings of Madhvacharyas, Dvaita, Vada, and the teachings of Shankaracharya, it's Kevala Advaita, and the teachings of Ramanujacharya are Vashishta Advaita. You've heard these terms before. So the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's a term that was given by Jiva Goswami after Mahaprabhu's departure, because he was foremost scholar amongst those that were writing on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, is Achintya Veda Abheda Tattva. I don't want to go into like a whole long launch about what those terms mean, because it's important, but I don't need to do that this evening. The Madhvacharya emphasized the difference between all things and the source of emanation. Is showing his two fingers holding in the air. Pancha Dvaita. And because it wasn't enough, the Vaishnava teaching of Ramanujacharya, Vashishta Advaita. Vishishta Advaita in simple terms is there are Vishishtas, or there's attributes that are inherently within the Supreme. There's that non-difference relationship of Vishishtas with the Source, the Supreme. So there's an Advaita relationship between all things and the Supreme. And sometimes there's the material energy that's manifest and then not manifest. There's spiritual potencies that are sometimes manifest and not manifest. Sometimes his form is manifest and not manifest. There's spiritual and material potencies that are his, and they are inherently within him, or they inhere within him. They're his Vishishtas. So there's two things. There's him and his Vishishtas. although there's a relationship of non-difference between them, because they're his. And Madhvacharya emphasized there's differences. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized both, simultaneously both. It's a long explanation why one is not adequate or the other is not adequate. They're both necessary. That's what the Bhagavatam teaches, and these verses that we're going to be discussing, starting with it's going to be simple, three verses, 20, 21, 22, from this chapter 9. There's prayers of Prahlad, and he says 5 years old, but his knowledge is very high because he's heard from Narada, and he's now speaking. The emphasis on the Advaita feature initially, and then he moves to emphasis on the Advaita, the non-difference feature initially, and then he goes over to the difference side. And the nature of these two, difference and non-difference, if one understands this not difference and non-difference truth, then it leads to taking shelter. Something very similar, almost the same, as what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the first of the Chaturshloki verses. I am the source of everything, everything comes from me, one who knows this engages in my devotional service. And Prahlad Maharaj knows this, and he's engaging in devotional service. But he knows why he's engaging in devotional service. And there isn't an option other than devotional service, because he knows what he knows. Understanding this truth, you're the only shelter. So he's seeing the form of Lord Nrisingadev. He knows very well, he's already stated it, he is Lord Vishnu, assuming this form to uphold the words of Brahma. And so it's a very fearsome feature that we heard yesterday. He's not afraid of, because it's not meant for him, it's meant for Hiranyakashipu. But his nature is very affectionate and very loving, which he immediately shows to Prahlad. That's what's meant for the devotee, and the fierce, ferocious feature is meant for Hiranyakashipu. But it's Lord Vishnu, half man, half lion incarnation. And he is the source of everything. So we're going to hear. He is the source of everything, and he lists some of the everythings. And because he's the source of everything, there's a relationship of non-difference of those everythings with him. Here's the first of the three verses for this evening. It's going to be short. My dear Lord, everyone in this material world is under the modes of material nature, being influenced by goodness, passion, and ignorance. Everyone, from the greatest personality, Lord Brahma, down to the small ant, works under the influence of these modes. Therefore, everyone in this material world is influenced by your energy. Then he makes some lists. The cause for which they work, the place where they work, the time when they work, the matter due to which they work, the goal of life they have considered final, and the process for obtaining this goal, all are nothing but manifestations of your energy. That's the non-difference feature of the Supreme. Indeed, since the energy and the energetic are identical, all of them are but manifestations of you. So this is a non-different statement, or a Veda statement with specifics in their list. Here's a short description, Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul within the core of everyone's heart, gives inspirations for action according to one's mentality. All of these mentalities are merely facilities given by Krishna to the person acting. Because everyone has a different goal differently as guided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now we have three things. There's living entities, there's matter, and there's the controller of both living entities and matter. And that controller of both is situated in the heart, knowing the desires, knowing the karma, knowing the modes of nature, and so impetus is given from the Supersoul through the medium of the gross body. And mind and senses go where they go. As long as we work according to our material senses, we're in material life. As soon as we act according to the real transcendental direction of the Lord, our position is spiritual. In other words, same activity, same body, same set of senses, but different consciousness. So, which direction are we taking? The direction of Krishna or the direction of the senses? Again, from the purport. When one gives up materially designated positions and works directly under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's spiritual life is revived. This is described as swaropena vyavastati, or being situated in one's original constitutional position. Does anybody remember hearing that phrase from before? Yeah? Yeah? I'll do a little review. Swaropena vyavastati. It comes in the verses 6 and 7 of Prahlad's prayers. It's before he starts his prayers, after Bodhisattva puts his hand on Prahlad's head. And all material contamination, residual, he's already pure, but absolutely pure. And he's feeling ecstasy. The Lord is feeling ecstasy. He enters a state of trance, with his mind completely fixed upon Bodhisattva. His mind doesn't go anywhere. His whole body is experiencing symptoms of ecstasy, bhava. And in that trance condition, he's liberated. Remember, we were discussing this position of neutrality or nirvana. Nirvana, a Buddhist, it's not a Buddhist term, it's a Sanskrit term. But Buddhists use it to indicate beyond material contamination, beyond material contact, period. When you're enlightened, you go beyond what you think is, you go beyond delusion and enter into the state of enlightenment. And the state of enlightenment is nirvana, in their terminology. And we discussed, Prabhupada writes, this stage of samadhi is beyond, it includes and it's beyond nirvana, it's beyond neutrality, what's on the other side of nirvana? What's on the other side of nirvana? Well, if you're a Buddhist, you'll never know because that's as far as you can go. But, according to just chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, it explains what's beyond nirvana. It's a stage where there's spiritual potency, spiritual ecstasy, where one knows the source of everything, one is engaged in activities in relation to the source of everything, and one experiences an ecstatic feeling of love in that relationship with the source of everything. This verse is describing Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, is the source of everything. Prahlad is, he's in this stage beyond nirvana, so he knows, I have a relationship with you. All this stuff that's over here, and without exception, everything is under the modes of nature. Next he's going to say, but you're beyond the modes of nature, and he's talking to, or he's praying to, that same Supreme Lord. So this Swarupena Vyavastati is a phrase that comes from, doesn't say where it is, but it's 2.10.6. And we'll just, this is review from what we discussed earlier. 2.10.1, it's Shukadeva Goswami listing the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. And I could list them out, but number 9 in that list is liberation, moksha, the topic discussed in the Bhagavatam. And then in verse 6, he explains what the Bhagavatam says about liberation. And liberation is Swarupena Vyavastati. Sva, rupa, in one's spiritual form, just like pictured here, in one's spiritual form, one engages in spiritual activity. One's Swarupa is one's spiritual form. This is an image of Narada from his previous life. At the end of life, it's described. He lived his life as was instructed to him by the Bhaktivedantas. And he lived his whole life in that mood of devotion. And when the time of death came, very nice poetry, as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. Now, lightning and thunder may not simultaneously, but lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. So immediately, his form as Narada manifest, left that body that was no longer functioning, and he attained his spiritual form. So Vyavastati, stiti means situated. So what do you do when you're situated in your spiritual form? That's what liberation is. That's activity beyond nirvana. It's not like we're anti-nirvana bodies. It's just we understand cessation of material existence is incomplete. So back here, when one gives up materially designated positions, that's the negative part, then the positive part works directly under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you can, even in your body, not have to wait till your next body, or you give up the body. If the activities of this body, this is what Prahlad's prayer is saying, if the activities of this body are with the recognition that it's all emanation from Krishna, so we don't have a sense of separate existence from Krishna, we're connected to Him inseparably. The body, the mind, and the soul are inseparably connected to Him. So we give up materially designated positions. It doesn't mean you give up activity or you stop being a student or being a mother or stop, negate everything. That's not the meaning. But the identification with those positions and instead work directly under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's the Swarupena Vyavastati, being situated in one's original constitutional position, description of mukti or liberation from material bondage. It's worth going over and over and over and over again to make it very clear, because it's such a fundamental message of bhakti. Bhakti, say it again. Bhakti doesn't mean giving up. Say it this way. Arjuna was thinking, I don't want the consequences of this battle, and so I'll give up my dharma. Karma sannyas. I'll stop being a kshatriya and go to the forest and become a renunciate. And Krishna says, no, perform your prescribed duty. And Swarupena Vyavastati, in your spiritual identity as my devotee, you engage in activities under my direction. And that's mukti. just hearing Prabhupada expressing, people don't understand this. He was saying, people say, what's with you people? You know, you're eating and we're eating. You go to work, we go to work. And you do the same stuff that we do. So what's spiritual about what you do? What makes this Krishna consciousness something that's spiritual? He's saying very clearly, people don't understand this. Because to be spiritual means you stop doing those things. That's the common notion. And it's an impersonal notion. It's the teaching of Shankaracharya. It's explicitly the teaching of Shankaracharya. If you want to make spiritual advancement, according to Shankara's teaching, you have to take sannyas. If you don't take sannyas, you can't make spiritual progress. Full stop. And if you can't take sannyas, then you can get ready to take sannyas. But you know, you can't make spiritual progress until you take sannyas. But then when you take sannyas, you become Narayan. Like Zippo. Anyway, it's common. I'll embellish it a little bit. It's common for young men who are taking an interest in Krishna consciousness that their parents start getting worried. Thinking, uh-oh, he's going to give up his education and give up his job and give up his all the good things of life and become a sannyasi. He starts getting too serious about Krishna consciousness. Well, because they don't understand what Krishna consciousness is. It doesn't mean give those things up. That's artificial, give those things up, because it's part of Krishna. It's a whole other thing to continue those things and do them for Krishna. But that's Krishna consciousness. Because they're Krishna's. They're for Krishna. So it just means changing the consciousness behind the activity, and that's this Swaropena Vyavastiti. Just those very simple phrases. Give up the materially designated positions and instead work under the personality of Godhead. So there's Narada giving up his body again. Here's text 21. O Lord, O Supreme Eternal, by expanding your plenary portion, you have created the subtle bodies of living entities through the agency of your external energy, which is agitated by time. He's describing the process of creation, a Purusha avatar function. Not a super soul function, it's a Mahavishnu and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu function. Thus the mind entraps the living entity in unlimited varieties of desires to be fulfilled by the Vedic directions of Karmakanda and the 16 elements. Who can get free from this entanglement unless he takes shelter at your lotus feet? The process of creation, it's easy to go into this in detail because the Bhagavatam goes into a detail. I'm not. It's just kind of high level. Mahavishnu, there's three Vishnu forms. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the Lord of the universe, and Shiradakshaya Vishnu, the Lord of the heart, and within every atom. The Mahavishnu glances at Pradhan, the sum total of undifferentiated material energy. He just glances at Pradhan with the desire that this reflection of his internal potency, Pradhan, this external energy, is a person who wants some service. So let me give her some service. Just a desire. His desire is then fulfilled by his internal potency, who takes all the living entities and entrusts those living entities that are within the body of Mahavishnu during the cosmic annihilation, entrust all, it's called samasti, all those living entities, that's a lot of living entities, to the glance of Mahavishnu and time energy. And there they go, zoom. Time energy and living entities contacting Pradhan. And with this, it says, agitated by time, Kalina Chodita, agitated by time, what happens? The undifferentiated elements start to separate out. And first comes our dear friend false ego. And then false ego starts to mix with the modes of nature that were previously dormant, but now they're agitated. And the mind mentioned. The mind is manifest. The false ego mixing with the mode of goodness manifests the mind. False ego mixing with the mode of passion manifests material intelligence. False ego mixing with ignorance manifests the five gross elements. And then from those, the five working senses, five knowledge acquiring senses, and five objects of the senses. That was really fast. You have 23 elements. And then there's cheta, or contaminated consciousness. A very interesting topic. So there's the 24 elements. It's just not going into detail, just saying, O Supreme Eternal, by expanding your plenary portion, that's Mahavishnu, you have created the subtle bodies of the living entities, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Through the agency of your external energy, Pradhan, which is agitated by time. Just describe creation in one sentence. Thus the mind entraps the living entities in unlimited varieties of desires. So the unlimited variety of desires, we discussed this in relation to Buddhism. Remember, Buddhism teaches the root cause of suffering is desire. Free from suffering is to become free from desire. So there's this talk of desirelessness. But you can't be desireless because you're a spirit soul. And spirit souls by nature are part and parcel of the Supreme, who has unlimited desire. So we have tiny little desires. You can't take desire away from the soul. It's not possible. You can make it feel like there isn't desire by anesthesia. But it's just temporary. It just suppresses, puts everything to sleep, and when anesthesia wears off, there's the desire again. Because the modes of nature are there. And the living entity is conscious. So you have to deny that there's a living entity. You have to deny that there's consciousness to get to this state where there's no desire. It's actually artificial. Vitaraga vaya krodha, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, it arises out of frustration. Suffering. Get rid of suffering. How to get rid of suffering? No desire. Okay, no desire. Get a dagger and stab desire to death. But you can't kill the soul. There's no such thing. It's a temporary in abeyance position, which is the same thing that happens when you're in the body of Mahavishnu. The souls are there, but time isn't activated, and so desire is dormant. And when the living entities are placed within the field of material energy and time energy is there, desires come out again, because they're there. What to do? Your desire, that's what to do. How do you do that? Well, association with devotees that teach the way of bhakti, and then you harmonize your desire with the Supreme desire. It's called love. Very nice. Much nicer than nothingness that doesn't even exist. Okay. Who can get free from this entanglement unless he takes shelter of your lotus feet? Samsara chakram aja ko titaratvad anyaha. Prabhupada speaks in simple terms of this time factor. It's in Queen Kunti's prayers. It comes in different places in the Bhagavatam. Because the time energy moves things. Say it conversely. Without time, nothing moves. Nothing happens. Say it positively. You need time to do stuff. Not just because, you know, you're slow. It's just that time energy is needed to move matter. Time moves the material energy. Again, conversely, without time, if you were the Supreme Lord, close your eyes and become the Supreme Lord for a moment, and you wanted to, like, withdraw the creation, what would you do? Really simply pull the plug. Just withdraw time energy. The whole thing collapses. And again, it's described in as the expansion of creation is in the third canto, withdrawal of creation is in the 12th canto. And that's how he does. He just pulls time. It's over. Take a little time. But it's over. It's not even like time out. It's over. For the same period as creation, there's the period of resting. And time as we know it is withdrawn. Eternal time is existing. So the time factor is super important. It comes in a number of places in Prahlad's prayers. He's 5 years old, but he understands things and expresses them very simply, but they're very deep and profound. The time factor. So, all the activities in both the spiritual and material world are certainly conducted by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the agency of either the material or spiritual nature. So what's intended by these illustrations? This is the material creation. This is the spiritual sky with the Vaikuntha planets and Krishna Loka. And there is Krishna and Krishna Loka. So whether it's material or spiritual activities, there's the will of the Supreme Lord or the sanction of the Supreme Lord and the material or spiritual energies. To enjoy the material energy, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, created this material world and gave a living entity the facilities through the 16 kinds of perverted support in terms of the knowledge-gathering senses, the working senses, the mind, and the 5 material elements. There's illustration. This is from a BTG article by Vishaka. And it's just still indicating the five and the one. 16. Knowledge acquiring, working senses, gross elements, and the mind. It's the process of creation expressed simply. The wheel of repeated birth and death is created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But to direct the bewildered living entity in progress toward liberation, according to varied stages that are different given in the Vedas. Like sometimes there's a question, why so many religions? Well, there's different things for people to learn. Some people don't want to just surrender to Krishna. But a lot of people don't want to just surrender to Krishna. So there's different things that are provided to help them make some steps. And there's different steps. So there's variegated teachings. But actually is one final conclusion. It's all intended for one thing. Just like this. All injunctions and prohibitions. Sarva vidhi niseda shur. This has one purpose, remembering and engaging in Krishna's service. The fallen, conditioned living entity trapped by the external energy, loiters in the material world. But if by good fortune he meets a bona fide representative of the Lord who gives him the seed of devotional service, and if he takes advantage of such a guru or representative of God, he receives the bhakti lata bija, the seed of devotional service. If he properly cultivates Krishna consciousness, then he gradually is elevated to the spiritual world. So that illustration on the left is, that's the creeper of bhakti that's grown from the seed of bhakti. And there's the spiritual world. This is Prabhupada's explaining what Prahlad's prayer says. It's a very, the implication in the temporary is very complex. We're bound by the actions and reactions of the material world unless the bondage can be relieved. And that's done through the bhakti process. And the third and final verse for this evening, I underlined this word, prapanam. And it's connected to the first slide, that image of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if we understand the teaching of Mahaprabhu, philosophically that is, that everything has its oneness and difference with the Supreme Lord, there's only one thing to do. You surrender to him. Take shelter of his service. Here's this word, time again, kala. In nishpidjmanam, let's see how Prabhupada is translated. My dear Lord of Supreme Great, you have created this material world of 16 constituents, but you are transcendental. So this is the Veda part. You are transcendental to their material qualities. In other words, these material qualities are under your full control, and you are never conquered by them. Therefore, the time element, kala, the time element is your representation. So, we went over this, and now we're doing it again. It's good, repetition is good. Time is sometimes described as Krishna. Time I am, destroyer of all things. What's coming up in just the next slides. But there's also the time energy, so the energetic and the energy are different. The time energy represents the energetic, Krishna. So time is his representation. There's a non-difference and there's a difference aspect, even with time. My Lord, O Supreme, no one can conquer you. As for me, however, I am being crushed. The wheel of Pijamanam. I'm being crushed by the wheel of time. And therefore, I surrender fully unto you. Now, kindly take me under the protection of your lotus feet. Person who is enlightened, this phrase of enlightenment meaning nirvana, the understanding of enlightenment of Prahlad, it only leaves you with one thing. There isn't another thing. You take shelter of he who is the source of everything. And in a life of love, instead of a life of being crushed. Not a difficult choice. If you're in this enlightened position. If you're not in the enlightened position, then chances are you're influenced by Maya and even with good intentions get crushed. So time element is a representation directly stated by Prahlad in his prayers. Now, there are these other statements of, among subduers, I am time. This is the opulences of the absolute. Time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds. And I have come here to destroy all people. That's 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Nispijamanam. Prahlada is saying he's being crushed by the wheel of time. Every living entity in the material condition is actually being crushed again and again. To be saved from this position, one must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then one will be happy. A chance to be happy. Take shelter. Because whether it's in the lower, middle, or upper carousel of time is acting. This is a very nice description when Gopa Kumar visits Brahmaloka. He's really impressed at how Brahma is so elevated and filled with knowledge and so forth, but he finds he's in big anxiety. He's going to die. Although his life duration is practically, from our perspective, it's limitless. But it's limited, and he knows it. From the highest position down to the lowest. So, why must we take shelter of Krishna? It's asked directly in the purport. When we give up our constitutional position, the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates this material energy and her influence over the conditioned soul. Therefore, he is the Supreme, and only he can deliver the conditioned soul from the onslaught of material nature. It's our place of shelter. So, this Bhagavad Gita verse, chapter 7, we have this, there is a choice. We can struggle. Daiveyeshu gunani mamamaya dharatyaya. That's the first step. Mamamaya dharatyaya, struggle hard. That's one option with maya. And the other is prapadyante, exactly the verse, word in the verse, prapana. And we can go beyond. But that's the why. It's the intelligent thing to do, take shelter. Unless one fully surrenders to the Supreme Lord, one cannot be saved from being crushed. That's the conclusion for this evening. So, that's a universal teaching within Vedic literature. Certainly it's a universal teaching within the Bhagavatam, and that means also Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So, what are we waiting for? Any discussion? Partial surrender, that's good enough, right? There's always something. And after that, there's another something. And after that, there's another so many somethings. Well, we're creatures of habit, and who can say how many lifetimes we've been acting independently? So, we're creatures of habit. We're surrendering. But we're creatures of habit. There's a long-standing tendency to be acting independently. And, you know, be honest, we're attached to being independent. This is America. Land of the free and the home of the brave. declare independence. We're independent. But we're not independent. But in that sense of independent enjoyment, independent from Krishna's enjoyment, that's the root of our misery. But it's not, so let's go back to the Buddhism thing. It's not desire that's the source of suffering. It's ignorance. And then the primordial ignorance is ignoring Krishna. And from that primordial ignorance comes little baby ignorances. And it comes ignorant desire. It influences desire in an ignorant way. And then comes ignorant activity. So the full surrender is let go of that propensity of the original ignorance. Instead, give full attention. So we're giving mixed attention, something and something. Because we're creatures of habit. There's many very important things we have to attend to. I mean, how can I be attentive in my job or my studies or my whatever it is that I'm doing if I'm thinking of Krishna? I'll get fired. I'll flunk my exam. I won't be a good mother. I'll just be sitting there thinking of Krishna. So how do we think of Krishna and do our duties? It's core instruction. Core instruction. Perform your prescribed duty and always think of him. I mean, the full surrender to Krishna. Full surrender to Krishna means you don't see a separation between those activities and Krishna. You're doing it for Krishna. That's love. Young boy and young girl have a romance. And what's he thinking of? What's she thinking of? Because of love, they're thinking of each other. They're staring out the window instead of paying attention to class and thinking of her or him. But it's possible to not stare out the window, but do the thing that you do in life and be mindful of who you're doing it for and where the ability has come from. This is exactly that list that's in verse 20. The objectives and the ability to fulfill those objectives. It's just acknowledging that my life is dependent upon Krishna as I'm doing what I'm doing. That's the full surrender. Doesn't that just mean giving things up? Just giving up ignorance. Giving up ignoring Krishna. So we're in the beginning stages. Where we're trying to dovetail stuff that I like to do and Krishna likes me to do that stuff. But it's not so much for Krishna, it's just, you know, it's like bona fide. And then gradually devotion. And take anything. Singing. Some people like to sing. Oh, you can sing in Krishna consciousness. It's great. I just sing because I like to sing in Krishna consciousness. But then the leveraging to take the full surrender to Krishna is you sing for Krishna, for his pleasure. And when that, so progressively, bhakti means practical activity for the satisfaction of the Supreme. Practical activity. Supposing somebody's an accountant. Supposing somebody's a doctor. Supposing somebody's a lawyer. Supposing somebody's a housewife. Supposing somebody is a whatever they are. A student. And the art is to do that, which is my nature and my duty. For Krishna. That's my means of maintenance. And then I'll do it because it's my means of maintenance. And then over here is my spiritual life. That's secularism. And that's not full surrender to Krishna. Not what Krishna is asking from Arjuna. And of us. time energy will act differently in our life, and the external or internal potency will act differently in our life, and everything will act differently. But the activity will look the same, may look the same. Someone singing with devotion for Krishna, someone singing because they have a nice voice, and they like people appreciating their nice voice. Or they just enjoy musicality. Or whatever. Activity and devotion is transcendental. And there's degrees. Less than full and full. Oh, he's not forcing us to come back. Is it a fact? The answer is no. Is it a fact that eventually all living entities will return to the spiritual world? Perpetually, he says that. Perpetually, I cast them into demoniac species. It's not necessary. So does that deny free will? Because by wrong use of free will, there's consequences. Now you've denied me my free will. But it's not that free will is unlimited. It's limited. The statement is not living entity has unlimited free will. The statement is living entity has tiny free will. And the range is pretty small. And starts with in relation to Krishna or not in relation with Krishna. And the rope gets even shorter if it's not in relation to Krishna. It gets longer if it's more towards the relationship with Krishna. And when it's fully in relation to Krishna, then it's maximum freedom. Like Narada. He can go anywhere. Doesn't need a passport. Doesn't need an aircraft. He doesn't. He can go anywhere. Spiritual world, material world. Full freedom. Because he has only one desire. He has maximum freedom. Not unlimited. He's not God. But maximum freedom. There's a free will option. No, you don't have more free will. You have more freedom. Proper use of free will, less restriction. I think of it like in India, it's very common that when they keep a cow, they put a rope around the cow's neck, and then on the other end, a stake, and then it restricts the cow a certain radius. They can only go within a certain radius. But if it's a longer rope, they can have a longer radius. A shorter rope, less radius. So how we use our free will determines how long the rope is. Proper use of free will. We're still, still have a rope, but much greater freedom. And then, just by command, by sound, turn left, turn right. You don't even need a rope. Prasanna Maharaj described to me, he used to train oxen from outside the fence. I mean, so that he could plow the field and he'd just say, gee and haw, and they would turn left and turn right and stop and turn around and plow to go in the other direction. just by verbal command. They didn't need a ring through their nose and a rope and pull. Just sound. More freedom. But still under control. Controlled by the internal potency, controlled by the external potency, longer rope and shorter rope. So for Narada, good example, and there's others like him. The Navayogendras are like him. They could go anywhere. Spiritual, mature world. They had the power. They had the freedom. They had one thing. Giving transcendental wisdom to others. But fully enlightened, fully liberated persons. There's greater range of freedom, not greater free will. Free will is operative. Use of free will, it's restricted more. Go down to lower planetary systems and not very much freedom there. Higher planets, there's above the heavenly planets, there's more freedom. More freedom, more freedom. Examples. For sure we know from Bhagavad Gita it's very difficult. But you know, is it, although very difficult, is it possible? Even those that do that, it doesn't mean that they achieve that. I thought you're asking the same question again and again. The same question. It's highly unlikely. Principle-wise, it's possible, but highly unlikely for many reasons. Our life duration is shorter, qualities are shorter, everything's diminished. Therefore, this asset of this wave of special descending mercy, that's our hope. Not just our capacity, but receiving mercy. Anything else?